Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation of the 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is September the 16th, 2024, right of the 14th day of Tishri, 2028. And we'll start our second service today with a continuation of, we're on part 7, who is Israel by the promise? And he says the prophecy, we're on page 137 of the Shepherd Rod, this volume 4 book, says for the... Okay, as I said, we're on page 137. Actually, we're still in part 6, section 6. But we're on number 7 of this series, Israel by the promise. For the prophecy could not have been for the early part of the Apostolic Church with the 12 apostles and their leadership. For we read in the Isaiah 54:17, no weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of Yahshua, and their righteousness is of me, saith Yahshua. For no weapon that for any weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper. There won't be any weapon that is formed against Yahweh's people that is prosper. If this scripture had a reference to the early part of the church or power unto the dark ages, then Yahweh would have failed to carry out his promise. Note that from the beginning of the apostolic church, the stones, swords, crosses, ropes, fires, and many other cruel instruments which were formed against the church did prosper and continued to prosper up until about the middle of the 18th century. Therefore, the prophet should have had no reference for the early part of the church. For the following quotation will prove that the time for which the scripture applies, whosoever shall gather together against thee shall fail, any weapon that is formed against thee shall not prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. Clad in the armor of the Yahshua's righteousness, the purified church of the house of David, with Yahshua sitting upon the throne of David at this time now, fulfilling the prophecy of Yahweh the Father of Heaven using his Son and sending him to set the everlasting kingdom of heaven, fulfilling the prophecy of Daniel 2:44 and 45, is to enter upon her final conflict. Here is the moon, here is the sun, and terrible is an army with the banners. For the darkest hour of the purified house of Israel struggle with the powers of the evil is that which immediately precedes the day of her final deliverance. That man who trusts in the Yahweh needs fear, for when the blast of the terrible one is as a storm against the wall, Yahweh will be unto his purified congregation of Israel as a refuge from the storm. Prophets and Kings, page 725. Again, we read in the early writings, pages 284 and 5, as the saints left the city and villages, they were pursued by the wicked who sought to slay them. But the swords that were raised to kill Yahweh's people broke and fell as a powerless as a star. Angel of Yahweh shielded the saints as they cried day and night for the deliverance. Their cry came up before the Yahweh and his son Yahshua. Thus we have proof that the chapter was written for the people of Yahweh who shall live at the time of the end. For the intention in this article is not to explain all that the chapter contains, only unto the point, only for the pointing out of time that it is intended for, with a few instructive remarks. And another study, we may take all these chapters separate of each other, verse by verse. In Isaiah 54:14-15, there is a great encouragement for the people of the Yahweh. And the encouragement is for the strengthening of our faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, the new and living way, Hebrews 10:19-20. And the righteousness shalt thou be established. Okay. So we have to come into full righteousness if we want to be established in this purified kingdom of the Yahshua. This is Yahshua. This is his purified kingdom, sent upon the throne of David to in the 12th parabolic hour when he comes back to judge the nation and to deliver the saints and to start the harvest and to perform the resurrection. Thou shalt be far from the oppression, for they shall surely gather together, but not by me. Whosoever shall gather together against thee shall fall for thy sake. For the time of the fulfillment of these verses is well portrayed in the early writings, pages 282 and 3. I saw the saints leaving the cities and villages and associating together in company and living in the most solitary places. For the angels provided them food and water while the wicked were suffering from the hunger and thirst. Then I saw the leading men of the earth consulting together, and Satan and his angels busy around them. I saw a writing copies of which were scattered in the different parts of the land, giving order that unless the saints should yield their peculiar faith, give up the Sabbath, and observe the first day of the week, the people were at liberty after a certain time to put them to death. It says, but the angels in the form of men of the war fought for them, and Satan wished to have the privilege of destroying the saints of the Most High, but Yahshua made his strength of his angels watch over them. Next came the multitude of the angry wicked, and next a mass of the evil angels hurrying on the wicked to slay the saints. But before they could approach Yahweh's people, the wicked must first pass this company of the mighty holy angels. This was impossible, for the angels of Yahweh were causing them to recede, and also causing the evil angels who were pressing around them to fall back. You know, I'm reading about what Sister White is saying here in the Speaking Heart of the Saint and the Spirit of Prophecy that they wrote. But you know what? If I can't find any Bible scriptures to back up any of this stuff that I'm reading about the saint and have a timeline, then I'm going to tell the people that hears this stuff, take it for what it's worth. But I read earlier where it says, Yahweh the Father gave his spirit freely to his son to accomplish and understand all things, and to his people. So he gives free of his spirit. And so Vicki Halsey explained about the Sister White about the saints leaving the cities and the wicked pursuing after them. But I don't find anything in the Bible prophecy, the scriptures, that backs this up. So, there must be a prophecy, though, that will somehow attest unto these things, that we're going to have to pray for Yahweh to give us that prophecy so we can back up these things that we're reading. Okay, Isaiah 54:11 contain another wonderful promise and show the purity and holiness of Yahweh's people. O thou afflicted, tossed with tempest and not comforted, behold, I will lay thy stone with the fair colors and lay thy foundations with the sapphires. And I will make thy windows of the agates, and thy gates of the carbuncles, and all thy borders of the pleasant stone. For this scripture could hardly refer unto the new Jerusalem, the holy city, for there is no reference made of the walls of the city having windows, nor could there be any necessity for them, for the 12 gates only are mentioned. Furthermore, the gates are made of the one great pearl, and not of the carbuncles. And the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Every several gate was of the one pearl, Revelation 21:21. For the verses being considered at this time, refer unto a spiritual house of the which Solomon's temple was a symbol. This spiritual house is referred to by the Paul in the Ephesians 3:20 and 22. And are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Yahshua himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building fit to be framed together groweth into a holy temple in the Yahshua, in whom you also are built together for an habitation of Yahweh through the Spirit. Note that the spiritual house has the foundation, windows, gates, and borders, enclosures, for the foundation refer unto the apostles, Yahshua himself being the chief cornerstone, see Ephesians 2:20, for the windows of a house are used for the giving light. This has reference unto the prophets who foresee things in advance and give the light upon the subject, as in 1 Samuel 9:9, before time, and Israel, when a man went to inquire of Yahweh, thus he spake, come and let us go unto the seer, for he that is now called a prophet was before time called a seer. For the gates of a house serve the purpose for the letting in of those who have the right, and for the keeping out all the others. This should have no other meaning than that the watchman on the walls of the Zion, the ministry, the borders for the enclosures, being the church members, the lively stone, 1 Peter 2:5. You also, as the lively stone, are built up for a spiritual house, and holy habitation, and holy priesthood, for the offering up of the spiritual sacrifices that are acceptable unto the Father, Yahweh, by his Son, Yahshua. Note that the kind and quality of the material used here in the spiritual house is as the most precious known unto humanity. For I will lay thy stones with the fair colors, Isaiah 54:11. Foundations of the sapphire, windows of the agate, gates of the carbuncle, and borders of the pleasant stone. Think of the Yahshua as the precious cornerstone. That means right there that Yahshua is going to come back to this earth to set up his kingdom himself, him being the chief cornerstone. He's going to build this house for the apostles. He sacrificed their lives as a wonderful foundation. The prophets, many of whom were killed by their cruelty, even unto the extent of being sawed between two logs, like the Isaiah was, as the windows for the giving light unto the beautiful house, and those in the purified church during the dark ages who suffered and were tortured by the cruel persecutors, for the beautifying of the borders of this most glorious spiritual hour. Notice I said that church during the dark days was a purified church. Yes, it was. Those people that sacrificed their lives to hold on to the truth, they were purified by that truth. Otherwise, they couldn't hold on to it. That each one asks himself, am I fitted to be used in this spiritual structure whose stones are of the fair colors? Am I willing to trust in the Yahweh and suffer for him? Whatever he may permit for my good? Or do I want the world and heaven too? And we serve the Yahweh and Mammon. Can we in any way disregard the instructions given unto us by the Spirit of Yahweh and expect to be fitted among those who would rather die than disobey in the smallest of his commands? How fearful the thought can the purified church supplant the instructions. I know it says can the church supplant the instructions of the Yahweh with the wise plans of man? Not hardly. For the Yahweh calls to return. Yahweh's call to return. The word that transforms, as it describes it on this subtitle, on page 140. One that thirsteth, come ye unto the water, and he that hath no money, come ye buy and eat. Yea, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Wherefore do ye spend money for that which is not bread, and ye labor for that which satisfies not? Hearken diligently unto me, and eat ye that which is good, and let your soul delight itself in the fatness, Isaiah 55:1. Number 2. For the word whole signifies whosoever or anyone that will hear. It was not so in the Old Testament time. For the Jews then thought the Bible was for the descendants of Abraham only. Come ye unto the waters, and he that hath no money. Water is the most essential article to sustain life, both human, animal, and vegetable. It is the most abundant substance, and without it life is impossible. In this verse it is meant to represent the spiritual life, which is bounded by the eternity. That's just speaking unto the woman at the well, said, whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give unto him, it shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him as a well of water springing up unto everlasting life. John 4:14. Water is composed of the two elements, namely oxygen and hydrogen. Without hydrogen, life cannot exist. And without oxygen, life will cease in less than 15 minutes. Water is never sold. It is free. For the price we pay in the city is not for the water, but for the service rendered in the bringing this necessity unto us for the daily use. Neither is it for sale in the scripture, but is offered free. No price can be set for the life eternal. If it was said no one could buy it, therefore the symbol used here is perfect. It would be impossible to substitute any other earthly article for the representing of the spiritual life. Yea, okay, our next subtitle is wine. Yea, come, buy the wine and milk without the money and without the price. Though the water is free, the wine and the milk are sold, but there is no set price on it, nor is the exchange made with the money. Something must be given in trade for the making of the transaction. What must it be? For the answer is found in the seventh verse as follows. If the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous stand his thought, and let him return unto the Yeshua, and he will have mercy upon him and unto our Father Yahweh, for he will abundantly pardon. We must forsake our ways and our thoughts, and in exchange take Yahweh's thoughts and follow his ways, Isaiah 55:8. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, it says to Yeshua. Not until after this transaction is made can one please serve or understand Yahweh, nor can he enter heaven. When this transaction is made, the thoughts, ways, desires, actions, and the whole human being is changed. How do we get Yahweh's thoughts? Only in one way may they be attained. For Yahweh's thoughts and ways are found in his words, the Bible. For the man who will follow the complete instructions by the Spirit of Yahweh is in a heavenly atmosphere and walks with Yahweh as the Enoch of old. What is the wine and the milk? We shall first speak of the wine. While the water is rich in the oxygen, the wine is rich in the iron. With the absence of the iron in the system, oxygen would be of no essential value unto the human body. For iron is the train by which oxygen is transported throughout the human anatomy. As soon as oxygen enters into the lungs, the agency of the iron takes the element and carries it through the entire system. Thus, whatsoever the wine represents, without it, the water, life, would be of no importance, as well as the water without the wine, as the symbol, would be altogether useless, for the wine represents the blood of the Yeshua. Therefore, the wine is used in the connection with the Yahshua's Supper as a symbol of the spilled blood of the Yahshua. If you must have life eternal, that's water symbol, you must also have the blood of the Yahshua, the wine. For one would be of no value without the other. Again, we see that no other earthly article, substance, or element should be used for the representing of the blood of the Yahshua. The milk, or the next symbol mentioned, is the milk, and it as well must be perfect in itself in the order for the pointing out of the truth intended by the spirit of the other. For the human body is made up of the 16 different elements. If we should exhaust our supply of the one of these elements and life did not cease immediately, depending on the element lacking, there would be trouble somewhere within the human system. If milk obtained all of the elements, okay, if the milk contained all of the elements required to keep the human body, the meaning of the symbol would indicate that the first two symbols or doctrines are of no great importance. Since milk does not contain all of the elements necessary, elements, it signifies that the doctrine represented by the milk only is not sufficient, for the element of the iron is absent from the milk. Though a trace of the iron is found in the milk, it is so infinitesimal that it may be expressed in the following language. The amount of iron found in the 10 gallons of the milk could be put in the corner of one's eye. That which is not found in the milk is supplied by the wine. Therefore, the three doctrines taught here cannot be separated one from the other. What is the doctrine taught by the milk? This symbol is simple to understand. The milk represents the word of Yahweh as found in the Bible. 1 Peter 2:2. As newborn babes desire the sincere milk of the word, that she may grow thereby. Yahweh's word is perfect, and it will supply all the doctrine elements needed for the human heart to make us perfect, but without the shedding of the blood of Yahshua, it would not profit us at all. Neither would the word and the blood help us much if there was no life in the Son of Yahweh. Thus, the water, wine, and milk are combined and cannot be separated one from another and still maintain a life eternal. Perfect symbols are they not? Suppose you would add an element to the milk. Would it not be a strange one? And if it be a strange one to the milk, would it be foreign to the human system? If this be true, we must conclude it would be poison to the human body. But you say, suppose I had to add the element of iron, it would not then be poison. By adding another element, it would put the milk out of the balance, and it would be milk no longer. It is impossible for the human wisdom to improve on the Yahweh's work. Just so, it is impossible for us to neglect one of Yahweh's words and yet maintain a spiritual life. Neither can we add, though the thing may be good, as we may see it, it would throw the word out of the balance and it would be Yahweh's word no longer. Just as the milk would be milk no longer, Yahweh's word must be kept in the human it said heart, pure and unadulterated. If we must live by it, this robe woven in the loom of heaven has in it not one thread of the human devising. That's taken from Christ's Object Lesson, Biology White, page 311. One may say, if the milk is not a balanced diet, how then can a babe be raised on the milk and yet be perfectly healthy? Yahweh, who made the milk, knew what the baby requires for its growth and what the milk could supply. So he has made provision before the babe is born, between the stomach and the small intestine. In that part of the bowel is found a large lump. This lump is placed there for the supplying of the iron for the opening to the small intestine, as well as to the stomach. It's too small for the lump to pass through. Thus it is compelled to remain there. Each time nourishment passes by, it absorbs part of the iron. Thus the element is supplied, and the babe has suffered no lack. As the baby grows older, the lump gradually decreases in the size. Just as it is with the human being, so it is with the animal life. Truly, our Yahweh is infallible, and who can comprehend his wisdom? Why spend money for that which is not bread? Wherefore do you, that's our next subtitle. Wherefore do you spend money for that which is not bread? And your labor for that which satisfies not. Hearken diligently unto me, and eat ye that which is good, and let your soul delight itself in the fatness, Isaiah 55:2. When we spend our money for food which does not contain all the required elements, or if it is of an unbalanced proportion, then it is not as the Creator made it. In such a case, we have spent our money for that which is not bread. When buying food, we must be very careful in our selection and make sure that it is free from the adulteration or disjunctive manufacturing processes. In such foods, the elements required for the sustaining of the physical health are not found. It would be only a waste of money in the buying such foods, for the most harm done by the use of these baser products is not unto one's pocketbook, only but to his health. and the reducing of his physical powers. The upkeep of the human body depends on the food supply we give it. Okay, it says, blessing unto the Jews and Gentiles, blind watchmen, Isaiah 56. We got 20 more minutes. Okay. We got the end of the beginning of this chapter. Yahweh asks his people, keep your judgment and do justice. For the reason given is that this salvation is near to come, and his righteousness to be revealed. For the thought is that the scroll is soon to make a turn, and the present order of the things must change. If the watchman unto whom Yahweh is speaking would not commence a general house cleaning, Yahweh would have to get watchmen who would lift their voice like a trumpet and show the people their transgression and the house of Jacob their sin. Yahweh in this chapter asked his people for a strict Sabbath observance. Regardless who they are, without the distinction of the class, race, or people, thus they shall have the promise of his covenant, and their offerings and sacrifices shall be accepted upon his altar. There is a severe charge against his watchmen of their failure for the dealing with the sins in the church, and the result is that his people are devoured by the enemy. His watchmen are blind. They are all ignorant. They are all dumb dogs. They cannot bark. Isaiah 6:10. For the phrase dumb dogs is not to humiliate them, but is used here as a symbol of all animals. A dog is a man's best friend, and it is a dog's business to protect his master or warn him of the danger by the sound of his barking. But if that dog becomes dumb and fails to give the sound, then he is not only useless unto his master, but dangerous, for he cannot be suspended, depended upon. Thus a dog is a perfect symbol of a watchman over Yahweh's people. A good faithful minister is a man's best friend by the warning him of the danger involved in sin. But if that minister will not sound the alarm and give the warning, then he has become as a dumb dog, not only useless but dangerous, for thus the sheep are devoured by the enemy. For the watchmen are not only charged with the failure for the dealing properly with the existing sins in the church, but they are greedy as well. Come ye, say they, I will fetch wine, and we will fill ourselves with the strong drink. Isaiah 56:12. This refers to the same watchmen or servants as in the Matthew 24:48, as the 50 who are gluttonous, disregard health, reform, and do not see the danger. Read Isaiah, the gospel prophet. page 25, first paragraph. For the watchmen mentioned by the prophet are not those in the Babylon popular churches, but his watchmen. This is true church, according unto the testimony of Genesis, page 445. Ezekiel 9 is a sitting of the 144,000, speaking of the Ezekiel prophecy. In the volume 5, page 211, we read, for the ancient men, those unto whom Yahweh had given great light, and who had stood as the guardians of the spiritual interests of the people, had betrayed their church. They had taken the position that we need not to look for the miracles and for the marked manifestation of the Yahweh's power as in the former days. Times have changed. These words strengthened their unbelief, and they said, Brother Yahshua will not do good, neither will he do evil, for he is too merciful for the visiting of his people in the judgment. Thus peace and safety is the cry from men who will never again lift up their voice like a trumpet to show Yahweh's people their transgressions and the house of Jacob their sin. These dumb devils that would not bark are the ones who feel the just vengeance of an offended Yahweh. Men, maidens, and little children all perish together. For the righteous and the wicked in the day of the trouble. Isaiah 57 is our next subtitle. For the entire 57th chapter deals with the idolatry in the Yahweh's church. Yahweh's people were called to come out of the Babylon. For the reason why we are called out is that we are to depart from the customs of the Babylon. This chapter reveals the truth. Though we have come out, we brought the customs and idolatry into the house of the Yahweh. For the evil spoken of in this chapter is the Christmas keeping and Christmas gifts one to another. For the ninth verse says, we have honored the king, the devil, by doing this, and debase ourselves even unto hell, for this surely is true. We as a people spend Yahshua's money in the telling the public that the Yahshua, that the Christmas is not the birthday of the Yahshua, and then turn about and do the same thing the world is doing. By such method, we are implicated in the highest form of the hypocrisy. Isaiah 57:4-5 and 6, tell of the evil practice of the Israel of the old and are written in this chapter to make a comparison with the people. Now, in as much as to say, we are doing the same as they back there and are no better. According to volume 1, page 129, I saw that many who professed to believe the truth for these last days think it strange that the children of Israel murmured as they journeyed, that after the wonderful dealings of the Yahweh with them, they should be so ungrateful as to forget what he had done for them. Said the angel, "You have done worse than they." To explain the entire chapter, it must be taken verse by verse. But being too lengthy, it cannot be done at this present time. True fasting, the Sabbath restored. Isaiah 58. This is our next subtitle. Isaiah 58:1. Well, we just came through the atonement here a few days ago, and we fasted on the atonement day, and we got a great blessing from it. Best atonement I've ever had. So it says, "Cry aloud, stir not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sin." Yahweh asks his watchmen to cry aloud and not to leave one thing undone. To lift up their voices like a trumpet, and fear not how far the sun may reach, to show the transgression and sins unto his people by a general house cleaning, for his salvation is near to come, and his righteousness to be revealed. Quoting Testimonies to Ministers, page 427, we read Penn's account of this moral corruption. If it takes the highest men and the highest position, Yahweh will not be trifled with. For the second verse, describes the people under whom their wishes to speak, of whom he wishes to speak. For the first part of the third verse tells of the complaints his people are making. We have fasted and have afflicted our soul, but our prayers are not heard. He takes no knowledge of them. Is their cry, the last part of the verse, tells where the trouble lies. Behold, in the day of your fast, you find pleasure and erect, exact all your labors. This fast cannot be a fast for the food, for when one is fasting of the food, he is permitted to find pleasure and exact all of his labor. In fact, one must go about his daily duties as usual, so that he would show no outward appearance of the fasting. Our Savior requires that this daily to be performed in the sincerity and not in the hypocrisy, for the glory of the Yahweh and not for the attraction and appearance unto men. Yahshua said, "Moreover, when you fast, be not as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear unto men to fast. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But thou, when thou fastest, anoint thine head, and wash thy face, that thou appear not unto men to fast, but unto thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly." Matthew 6:16-18. For the turning back unto Isaiah 58 verse 13 tells the kind of fast this is. It says that if thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Yeshua honorable, and shall honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words. Therefore, the fast mentioned here is not a fasting of the food, but of the pleasure, labor, and our own words and thoughts, and that we must honor Yahweh and keep his Sabbath holy. For the charge is that we exact all our labor on the Sabbath day, as a people we have forgotten the true meaning of the Sabbath keeping. We have come to suppose that anything which pertains more or less to religion is permissible on the Yahweh's holy day. It is said it is Yeshua's work, but Yahweh the Father has never said anywhere in the scriptures that his people are at liberty to do all manners of work that pertain to religion on the Sabbath day. Work which can be done on a day other than the Sabbath is not a work for the Sabbath. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Yeshua, thy Yahweh. In it thou shalt not do any work. Note the way that the commandments read. Any work Yahweh does not mean that we can do our work in the 6 days and his on the Sabbath. He says it is a day of the rest, not physical, but the spiritual rest. For instance, it would be wrong for one to sell good religious books on the Sabbath, even if he turned all their proceeds to the church. It would be wrong for a surgeon to perform surgical operations on the patient on the Sabbath day if it can be done at another time. It would be wrong for a nurse to give treatments on the patients on the Sabbath day if it was not absolutely necessary. Read volume 7, page 106. It would be wrong for a church council to meet on the Sabbath and discuss church business or make plans of any kind. It would be wrong for a Sabbath keeper to load himself with the evangelical announcement for a series of meetings and distribute them from the house to house on the Sabbath day. All this manner of the work should be done on a day other than the Sabbath. When we do this kind of the work on the Sabbath, we do it to save ourselves an hour or so of the time for the next day. Thus, we rob Yahweh of his time and add it unto our secular pleasure. If it is wrong for one to go and sell good religious books on the Sabbath, though he turns all the proceeds to the church, it would be doubly wrong to sell that same book in the house of Yahweh on the Sabbath day. regardless of what is done with the income. If all of this is true, then it would be wrong to go out with the harvest and giving papers and receive a contribution for the mission on the Sabbath. It is time for the Yahweh to call our attention unto these things. Quoting Patriarchs and Prophets, pages 313 and 14, "Ye shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy unto you. Whosoever doeth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people." Directions have just been given for the immediate erection of the tabernacle for the service of the Yahweh. And now the people might conclude, because the subject had in view was the glory of Yahweh, and also because of their great need of a place of the worship, that they would be justified in their working at the building upon the Sabbath. For the guarding of them from this error, a warning was given. Even the sacredness and urgency of that special work for Yahweh must not lead them for the infringing upon his holy rest day. For the balance of the chapter 58 teaches that we must take care of our poor and sick instead of sending them unto the county farm or hospital. If we are to be light in the Asher, there are many lessons that we can draw from the services of the ancient Israel. Yahweh gave them the seventh day Sabbath as a day of the rest for the praise and thanksgiving, though the sacrificial was a sacred religious service requiring much labor. They were not permitted to do it on the seventh day Sabbath. For this reason, Yahweh gave them the monthly Sabbath in which they were to do that sacred work. If the Yahweh did not allow every kind of religious service to be performed on the seventh day Sabbath, then will he now? Either Yahshua changed not, or either Yahweh the Father and the Son changed not. Read Leviticus 23, the whole chapter, verse 1 through 44. Okay, this brings us to the end of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We'll close now with a song.